Hey everyone, welcome to the first episode of the InfoSec Prep Podcast.
IP.
The IP, yes, we did a AMA, so here it is.
All right, I think we're good then. All right, we're gonna go ahead and start.
Yes.
Right, everyone, welcome to our very first Ask Me Anything related to the Offensive Security Certified Professional certification. We have some questions that we had captured previously before this had started. We have about 10 good ones. There's some good ones that we didn't quite pick just because they were related to the exam and were going to be quite tricky to pick. So I'm your host, Falcon Spy, and we have five panelists here with us. So I'll let them go ahead and introduce themselves, starting with Bajirota or however it's pronounced, and then work your way down.
I was hoping not to go first. Hey, I've been in InfoSec for maybe 3, 4 years or so by now. And before that, completely unrelated to InfoSec job. So yeah, this is new to me too.
I'm me. I'm that one youngin' around here with OSCP at 15, and I don't have any prior experience, and I'm me. Yeah.
Oh, me now, right? Well, hey, my name is Poppy. Some people might know me as Gecko or Indirect Direct Object Reference. I got my OSCP maybe like a year ago or something. I don't even remember. And currently doing my OSWE. I actually just got a position as a security engineer doing a lot of white box web application pen testing. And I kind of attribute a lot of that to the OSCP. So, yeah. Joe.
Yo, it's me. It's me, Joe. I've been in InfoSec as long as I've been was working on a degree in there. Got that. Recently got out about end of May. Have been doing security work since. Got my OSCP in October and have just been trying to push on to further and deeper things down the rabbit hole and hoping to grab a position soon in pen testing. Eventually, soon, maybe. I don't know.
Hi, this is Tiberius. I've been a pen tester for almost 8 years now, but I only got my OSCP last year because I'm lazy. I wrote auto recon. Yeah, I got it in there early. And I guess I write Udemy courses on the side now.
All right, cool. So those are our panelists. So I'll go ahead and kick things off with one of our first questions. We'll try to keep it to one or two people answering it, and then we'll move on. And after we get through our 10 questions here, we'll pull some questions from the OSCP AMA channel, and we'll go from there. So with that being said, the first question is, what was your IT background prior to hacking and starting the PWK course? And then additionally, how many days of lab time did you purchase, and what was your individual study plan? I'll just start assigning people if no one wants to take it.
Yo, so I guess I could start this one off. So as I said, I started off by actually getting a full 4-year degree in cybersecurity before I started OSCP, which really took care of all the basics of the networking, the how to set up things, like the most like the it was mostly like some IT networking mixed degree. Not it's not It's more of an IT degree than an actual like cybersecurity degree. So I did it was a lot of IT stuff, which really helps in starting with OSCP, because you can't really start with OSCP without really having a background in like networking and knowledge and all that, because a lot of the things you'll see, you won't really understand what you're looking at unless you understand kind of like the basis of it. Like if you understand DNS, then like let's say somebody has a DNS port open on something, it's more easy to figure out what you're doing versus, oh, hey, there's DNS open. I have no idea what that does, and I'm not sure what I'm looking at. So for the OSCP, So after I graduated in May, I started doing Hack the Box until about October-ish, and then I started the class. I took, I got 60 days of lab time, and then I worked on that, and my plan was just really try for the big boxes that everyone talks about, like the pain, the sufferance, the humble, those big boxes, try those out, because I was hoping the experience from Hack the Box before had helped, and I would say that it did. I would say the Hack the Box stuff that I did was probably the most useful thing I did in preparing for the exam. I wouldn't exactly say the labs were the useful thing, most useful thing, but I'd say they're more of like a just starting Hack the Box level. Like once you start to get through Hack the Box, a lot of the boxes you'll see on there are much harder than the things you'll encounter in the lab, but it is useful for going through and understanding stuff if you haven't really done pen testing stuff before. However, I wouldn't recommend the labs unless you have a solid understanding of the foundations, because they will expect you to understand the foundations. They're not going to walk you through it. All right.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks for that. That was Joe. So yeah, by the way, people can answer with their name before they start for the recording. All right, so thanks, Joe. I don't know if anyone else wants to answer that. Otherwise, we'll move on to the next question.
I'll talk that one. So for me, my background really started off, I think I started into InfoSec and IT as a whole as about 11 or 12 with the good old U.S. government Cyber Patriot program. Then I did that for a while, got second nationally in my first year, which was a really good introduction into the security side. Then I joined Hack the Box, it's close, about a year and a half ago, so it would have been about 13 then. Got into them, started doing some of the good old boxes like back in the day. And I've been doing that since. That was my big push into pen testing. And I started PWK with 30 days of lab time, and I procrastinated a lot, like many people do. I only ended up doing, I think, about 20, 30 boxes, although I plan to do more. And yeah.
All right, cool. I'd like
to jump on that if that's cool.
Yeah, go for it.
So I started out with a... Well, InfoSec started about 3 years ago for me with Security Plus. Prior to that, I got my Net Plus in high school and was working on my CCNA, but I never actually took it. Between then and there, I just had a regular job at Best Buy and some local state work. And once I got into Security Plus, I kind of fumbled around with the security field, not really sure what I wanted to do. And about 2 years ago, I decided I just wanted to take a jump at OSCP, and up to that point, I never even ran like MSF console. Did the recommended boxes on Hack the Box. I was really slow at first. Pretty much just watched IPsec's videos. Like everyone recommends, walking through them while I was doing the machine at the same time. Stopping every once in a while and researching. If I didn't understand why he did something or ran a command or wanted to know more about a command, I would look that up. After getting about halfway through the boxes, the recommended ones, I signed up for 90 days of lab time. I kind of put a lot of time into the lab, almost 300 or 400 hours. Ended up rooting all the boxes, and I would highly recommend spending, if you don't have any prior experience. I learned a lot in the lab. Granted, a lot of it is relevant to the lab, but being able to take a lot of the concepts that you learn in certifications that don't really test hands-on knowledge, it's more theory, and actually being able to apply hands-on to theory, I thought was very helpful and made up for a lot of lack of knowledge that certifications do give you.
Awesome. And all right, why don't we... do one more. I believe it was Tiberius or Poppy that hasn't answered yet. So one of you.
I'll go. Or you want to go, Tim?
I don't think I have anything to contribute because I kind of came into this already as a pet.
You cheated. You cheated. Yeah, so my background essentially was I took OSCP while I was in school. I was studying computer science. I always knew that I wanted to get into cybersecurity and pen testing, but I knew deep down that computer science was the best way to go to kind of understand things at, you know, at the actual bit level, not just learning cybersecurity and all the compliance and all that stuff. So I didn't really agree with the cybersecurity major. So I wasn't really actively doing Hack the Box or anything like that. I did it sometimes, but, you know, I was mostly focusing on school and computer science, which is a lot of, you know, theory and coding and stuff like that, which it does help. But it definitely was not something that you really need for the OSCP. So, like I said, I took OSCP over the summer when I was getting kind of bored of the computer science stuff because cybersecurity really was my passion. But like I said, I knew computer science was the way to go. So I decided to enroll in OSCP 1 year for the summer when I was just bored and sick of everything. And I kind of just really jumped into it. I had prior experience doing like CTFs, not much at all. Like I would definitely say I was beginner level. But I just jumped into it. And at the end of the day, it really is it's an entry level course. It's beginner level. That's what it's made for. It's made to teach you. I jumped into it. So that's pretty much my background. I have a security plus, which I don't think helped me at all regarding the OSCP. None of that really translated. Maybe it did implicitly, and I don't really realize it. But the more background, the better. But regarding OSCP, I don't think you need much background. As Joe said, you do need some sort of foundation. Like, you can't be like somebody's grandfather who doesn't know how a printer works or something like that. You need to know the basics of networking. And a little bit of coding does help a little bit, but you don't need much. As far as preparing and training, I would say it's mostly you want to build your own methodology. You want to get your mindset right. So like when I first started OSCP and I got into the labs, and a lot of new people will notice this too, is you run into a lot of things that you're not familiar with, and that's fine. You kind of have to, like at first I'd get very frustrated, like what is that? Like, man, like I don't know anything. And then it's kind of like as time progressed, I kind of matured in a way that every time I saw something that I didn't know or I didn't recognize, I took note of it. And it was exciting to find something new rather than frustrating. And it made the experience to learn a lot more smooth, and it was a lot more comfortable. So taking good notes and not being afraid to try new things and stuff like that. Like everybody says, Hack the Box is very good practice. If you could do Hack the Box at a decent level, you're going to be fine, I think. Regarding the labs, I kind of interpret those as like case studies. They're not going to be similar to the exam. They will be, obviously, there's vulnerabilities and such, but they're going to be a little different in the way that, I guess we'll probably talk about the exam a little bit later and the difference between the labs and the exam, but the machines and in the labs can be very different than the exam ones. But just take them as a case study, like take down notes, watch the Hack the Box walkthroughs. IPSEC is very good. Every time he does something you don't know about, write it down. Make sure that, like, if you see something one time you don't know what it is, make sure the next time you see it, you know exactly what it is, what to do, how to react, and things of that nature. So yeah, that's basically how I prepared.
All right. Thanks, Poppy. All right. So we're going to move on to the next question. I'm going to limit this one down to just two people for now. Probably people who are already not in the field. So sorry, Tiberius, you kind of are exempt from this one a little bit. But so with that being said, what is one belief you had about obtaining your OSCP certification, which you found out was wrong after you obtained it?
So this is Joe. I think I'll go for this one. So the one thing that I always hear, and this thing is true but also false, is that everyone's like OSCP is extremely hard. So the problem with that is, so it is by no means a beginner level thing. It is not I'm just starting into IT. I can do this. If you're just starting IT, yes, it is hard because pen testing is not an entry-level job, but it is really not the hard, it's really not incredibly hard on the terms of a pen testing scale. Like, it is very, like, loaf on that scale. Like, it's say, if you compare it to like Hack the Box, which is not always the best comparison, but it's probably more of like a easy to medium box and less of like the hard, insane, crazy, what am I looking at level boxes. So that's one thing that I heard a lot. It's like, oh, it's really, really hard, but it's the stepping stone. But again, the thing is, pentesting is not an entry level job, so by that basis, it's hard. But on a pentesting scale, if you compare it just to pentesting, it's not hard.
All right. Well, thanks, Joe. We'll do one more. Whoever decides they want to.
I could expand on that, I guess. Like I said before, I do think the OSCP is entry level, but kind of Joe clarified a little bit. It's entry level for pen testing, but not really IT, right? So it's kind of like a catch there. But regarding that, I think the biggest belief I had was that was kind of like my ticket into pen testing. And, you know, after obtaining my OSCP and interviewing, and I, like I said, I got a job about a week ago, my first pen testing job. But after I got my OSCP and interviewing, I kind of came to the conclusion that if my knowledge was constrained to what I learned in PWK and getting the OSCP, I would not be a good pen tester. Like, there's so many things that OSCP misses out on. Like for example, like AV evasion, it comes up that a little bit, and like web apps, it's one of those things that's kind of 2 inches deep, mile wide. It's not going to really prepare you for an actual job. And that's kind of what I thought it was, because everybody, like Joe said, a lot of people interpret it as very difficult. But from a pen testing perspective, and somebody who's actually worked in pen testing and actual real pen tests, it's very, very simple. And it's not going to prepare you for the real world. It's just that, and that's what I thought at first, really.
Awesome. All right. Thanks for that, Poppy. All right. So we're going to move on to the next question. I'll start kind of picking some people who I know might be able to answer this pretty well. That's being said through some of the other questions. So as there are some that I know won't be applicable to some. So that being said, why don't we have Tiberius answer this first? It's what was your time management plan during the exam?
Hey, yeah, Tiberius here. So that's a good question. I think I've espoused on this a few times. I think my medium.com article has a bit on this. But effectively, I would run auto recon against the four main hosts while I did the buffer overflow. I think the buffer overflow took 38 minutes. And by that time, I had a bunch of results to go over. In terms of how I approached each host itself, I usually start with the 25-point host and then try and get the 20 points. So I had a pass with basically three hosts down. In terms of the actual time management, though, I would evaluate my progress on each host after about an hour. If I got a shell, like a local shell, I would reset the timer. So, and I wouldn't, I would move on to another host if I hadn't made any significant progress in 2 hours. And I felt like I stuck to that in the exam, and I think it worked out. I think I only moved on from a host once. Everything else, I think I did under the 2 hour mark.
All right. Thanks, Tiberius. I'll go ahead and get through this one. I'll let Bjorta answer this as well, and then I think we'll move on to the next question.
Time management wise, I followed something similar. One thing I kind of realized while going through the course was that I am very dyslexic with numbers, especially fat fingering numbers in or remembering a number in my head and typing it in later else. So after wasting a good amount of time with the overflow, I was just banging my head against the wall, couldn't figure it out, and I didn't know what to do, so I just deleted everything and started over. And as soon as I did that, it just worked. So I would definitely recommend if you just don't know why something's not working, stop what you're doing and take a step back, refocus, work on a different box, rewrite your script, relook at your scan results. But definitely you need some time to walk away, whether it's just cooking some food and thinking about the boxes or the exams you're on. Auto Recon's a great tool for sure.
All right, thanks, Pirata. All right, so the next question here, I'm going to limit this to probably Emma and myself, because I don't know anyone else who's probably going to be able to be applicable to this question. So I'll let Emma answer first. But, you know, assuming you fail the OSCP, how do you actually go back and prepare to make sure you don't make the same mistake?
Well, when I failed, I mean, don't copy me. I was really stupid. I just kind of took a week, and I didn't really focus too much on studying. I just turned to. I made a blog post about this as well. Check out my blog in my Discord bio. Anyways, I just took the time to see what I did wrong, like methodology wise. And really came down to, I tried to do everything too fast, like buffer overflow. I went way, way too fast, and I ended up taking like 4 hours to do it. In my second attempt, I went slower, and I went in 20 minutes, which is like, I don't know, taking your time makes you go faster. Yeah, but really, I mean, with the new policy, I really don't suggest you do this, but I just kind of winged it with the studying side, because it's either I knew it or I didn't. But, yeah, it's mainly the methodology I looked over, tried to think what I did wrong, how I could improve, but it wasn't really too much technical improvement.
All right, thanks for that, Emma. All right, so I will go ahead and answer this. I know, I guess, Joe failed as well, but I failed probably more than him. So that being said, I failed the exam twice and finally passed on my third try. So my first attempt, it was kind of just extremely poor time management. Spent about 12 hours on my very first box without doing the buffer overflow. Buffer overflow was actually one of the last boxes that I had done on my first attempt. So yeah, don't do that. I highly recommend doing the buffer overflow first. And while that's being done, you know, run tools like Auto Recon. You're welcome, Tiberius, for that shout out again. So I definitely recommend that. On my second attempt, what went wrong there wasn't necessarily time management. I had definitely planned a lot better, kind of did some of the things that Tiberius had mentioned while he was talking, you know, a question or two ago. Basically, if I didn't get any progress done in about 2 hours, I'd move on to the next toast. So my time management was well. Just my issue on the second exam was kind of just, I had a pretty weak area in terms of privilege escalation. And then I finally, you know, succeeded on my third attempt with doing a bunch of Hack the Box, Virtual Hacking Lab, doing the local privilege escalation workshop that's over on GitHub. And so I had about 90 days in the lab, I think I had most of the boxes done. But, you know, that being said, there's people that I know and spoken to that had succeeded on their very first attempt and they only did 5 boxes. So don't let the number of boxes be a good indicator. Some people are just really well known not well known, but you know, they know their subject material very well. They know what to look for. So I took a month between each attempt. So, you know, I was in the labs for 3 months and then a month between each. So, you know, overall it took me 6 months to get my certification. All right, so moving on to the next question here, I'll let this be opened up to kind of just about anyone here that's on the panel. So that being said, after receiving your OSCP certification, what do you think are key projects, certifications, trainings one should do to land a solid pen testing job and skip a junior phase? There's a little added to that. Some people might have purple team experience or blue team experience. You know, what do you do to, you know, move over to red teaming and pen testing as a kind of like a follow-up question?
Yeah, I guess I'll answer that because I got my first ever job as a pen tester, a security engineer, basically doing pen testing, which, like I said, I attribute to the OSCP. After the OSCP, you know, you get your methodology, and then you kind of, like I said, it's 2 inches deep, mile wide. So you're going to realize that you really don't know that much after the OSCP, but you kind of have the tools to actually, you know, the methodology to actually do pen testing. You understand pen testing from a high level. So after that, I suggest you kind of pick what you want to focus on. Like if it's binary exploitation or if it's web apps, I suggest web apps because, you know, everybody wants web app testers. Mobile is becoming very popular too. So just pick something that you want to specialize in and get very good at it. Like if you want to do network, get very good with network. If you want to do web apps, get very good with web apps. And what I did, you know, I try to get as good as I can with web apps. And by doing that, I took other certs like the Elor web app testing one. And I think the biggest thing for resumes to show to take initiative is actually do CTFs and work on small projects. Like even if it's something kind of like I think Homebrewer and Crab are working on some sort of project that'll kind of do like a static code analysis of like GitHub repositories, but just like a very simple Python script, things like that, even though probably a million people have done it before and probably done it better than you, it's an amazing learning experience and it's amazing for a resume. Even small projects like that, it shows that you could script, you have the skills, and you're very, very passionate about what you do. So I would say after OSCP, do some CTFs, work on some small projects, maybe some bash scripts, like some like auto recon, like Tib did, that'll go mile. That'll do wonders for you on a resume. And I think if you do that, you focus on one thing, get good at it, you'll scoot right into a job. I skipped the junior position. I didn't have any other formal IT desk job or anything like that. All I had was OSCP, did some CTFs, learned about web apps, worked on some small projects, and I found somebody who was willing to invest in me. And that's pretty much how I did it.
Awesome. All right. Thanks for that, Poppy.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, no, go ahead, Tiberius.
I think I'd add, especially if you don't have any experience in the field, I would also start looking into bug bounties, even if it's just reading up on some of the cool stuff that they're finding. And obviously, you know, if you can earn a small amount of money, that's great. And it gives you experience that you can sort of say, hey, I've been doing kind of pen testing. But I would definitely recommend learning web apps, even if you hate web apps, because the industry has been moving in that direction for a long time. And I don't see it stopping. Even mobile apps these days, a large proportion of them are moving towards effectively being a web app within a mobile app. And so you have a lot of the same kind of vulnerabilities. But definitely, again, I kind of feel like I'm echoing Gecko here right now, but definitely code stuff, put stuff on GitHub. I've been offered a job before where the guy was using a tool that I wrote and published. So, you know, that at least gives you some kind of name recognition. And it's always nice to have, you know, go into an interview and the guy say, yeah, I've actually used your tool. I know you. So we don't need to discuss anything technical. So that's really, really good. I think get your name out there as much as you can.
Awesome. Thanks, Tiberius. We're going to go ahead and move on to the next question here. So, you know, kind of shout out again to Emma. And this time I'm going to include Joe here. You know, since for those of you that failed your exam at least once or more than once, at any point did you consider not trying to take your exam again?
So I guess I'll go first. This is Joe. So for me, the answer was absolutely not. So the first time I took it, I was 2.5 points away from passing, and I knew exactly what I screwed up the first time. It was something that I realized after I took the exam that probably was not the best idea to try during the exam, but then I realized that the time pressure does sometimes get on you. You might try something that you're like, this might not work, or you might also get up sometimes, you might sometimes rabbit hole yourself, which is what I had happened to me the first time. So what I ended up doing was I was like, all right, so I'm right here. I already know that I'm like one box away from passing. So I already know. So I pretty much know that I can do it. I can just do it again. So I pretty much did exactly what Emma did. I just waited 2 weeks, and then I was like, I didn't really try anything. I really didn't try anything different. I just really didn't study or try anything between that. I just went for it again, and then I had passing points within 7 hours, and I got all of the boxes rooted except for one, but I didn't want to go for it, because the one thing that is really important you got to remember about this exam is that the report is your entire score. It doesn't matter how you do on the actual exam. If your report is crap, you fail. That is it. There is the report is the most important part of the exam. And if you screw up that report, then it doesn't matter how, if you got every single box and rooted every single one. So instead of going for root on the last box, I just went for the report. I wrote down the report, got my passing email back in 25 hours. And so, yeah, that was the experience with that.
Awesome. Thanks, Joe. For anyone who's just tuning in, this is Falcon Spy talking, the moderator for the chat. So I probably won't be saying my name before and after everyone talks. If you don't recognize the voice, that's completely fine. But that being said, Emma, if you need me to repeat the question, otherwise the floor.
Well, I mean, for me, it was just kind of like, I didn't want to fail because I wanted to get that title of youngest OSCP, which I still don't know if I have. Screw you, GDPR. Anyways, no, I didn't really consider not trying again. It's kind of like, just keep throwing money at OFSEC until they grant me a pass. Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, though, it was really just the time just to study my methodology instead of not technical skills. And yeah.
All right, thanks, Emma. All right, so I'll let everyone on the panel go ahead and answer this. Just try to keep it short and also obviously include your name for those who are kind of just tuning in or who have already been here, just so they know. So why don't we go ahead and start top down and, just remember to keep it short. So that being said, how long did you train before taking the exam, and what methods did you use to learn, whether it be Hack the Box, books, Virtual Hacking Lab, Port Swigger Academy, what have you? So Bjerto, why don't you go first? We'll go top down.
So I started out the very start, I did IPSEC's videos and recommended Hack the Box. Spent maybe a month and a half, 2 months on that. And that was my first introduction into essentially hacking. Then I got 3 months of Virtual Hacking Lab, used about a month of it. And that was about it. And I started up in the Cali Labs. Didn't really use any kind of books or anything like that. It was all just recommended.
All right, thanks, Bertha. Emma?
Hack the Box was a big thing with the good old PWK OSCP-like list of boxes. Going through those, PWK, there was a really good article on Sam's class where I use that for buffer overflow practice as well as LP workshop. And I think really just taking up all the information you can get, just IPSEC, Hack the Box, books, PWK, just every single little bit of information is good for PWK because you could recognize something from somewhere else, and the more information you have, the better. You can never be too prepared.
All right, thanks, Emma. Poppy?
Yeah, so I prepared for the OSCP basic same way everybody else did. TJ Noel has that list of what the OSCP-like boxes or whatever. But one thing I will say is those boxes are very similar to the lab machines, not so much the exam machines. And the discrepancy there is a lot of the exam machines, like the kernel exploits and stuff of that nature, you're going to actually have to be exploiting the misconfigurations and stuff. So be very careful with that list when it says OSCP-like boxes. I would say they're lab machine-like boxes, not really exam machine-like boxes. But yeah, it's nonetheless, it still is an amazing way to prepare for the exam. You know, it's everything is a case study. Every machine is going to be a little bit different. Just take note of the methodology. Take notes of everything you do, everything new you find. Yeah, so IPSEC's video is very good for that. What else? I think for the buffer overflow, the Cyber Mentor, very good series on how to do a basic Stack Overflow. There's another really good GitHub repository. I think it's called Do Stack Buffer Overflow Good. That's very good as well. Other than that, I think it's just time management at that point, like Mayo said. I think the best way to do that is do the buffer overflow while you scan the other hosts and take breaks and just be confident.
Awesome. Thanks, Poppy. I'll real quick before I turn it over to Joe, TJ Knoll is Offensive Security's community manager. He's basically in charge of their public relations. You know, if you have any issues or you want to ask him some questions about any of the courses, feel free to give him a shout out here on the server. His name is TJ Knoll. He's got a super bright red color, and his role is, you know, offensive security certified community manager or something along those lines. I don't really remember. All right. Anyway, Joe, it's all yours.
Yeah. So this question, so I pretty much just banged my head into Hack the Box. I started back when I think it was Netmon was still around, which was probably about four months ago. This was about early, late May of 2019. So I mostly just went through that, tried to knock through all the boxes I can, went through a lot of easies, went through some mediums, went through some hards, went through some insanes, got myself pro hacker on Hack the Box. Mostly just went through a lot of boxes, looked a little bit at IPvSec to figure out some of the things. Like there was at some points where I was stuck at some boxes where I couldn't exactly figure out what I was going to do with some ports. So I had to like learn it and understand, oh hey, here's what I can do with this, because I've never like attacked this one before. But a lot of it I mostly just did on my own, trying to figure out how I could get these boxes and just going box to off box, because I believe the biggest thing about the exam is you want to be able to understand, hey, I see this kind of thing, what do I want to do here, which is kind of that methodology thing about the, hey, I possibly see this thing, I could do this here or this. It's trying to find the path of least resistance and getting through. Because if you go with Occam's razor, the simplest answer is usually the correct answer.
Awesome. All right. Thanks, Joe. And then last but not least, Tiberius, you know, let me know if you need to have me repeat the question.
No, I think I got it. I mean, I guess technically I trained for 7 years, but the problem is, like, actual real-world pen testing is kind of nothing like PWK in both the labs and the exam, and that's only because real-life pen testing, you can attack a machine and for, like, hours and not get anywhere and then realize, oh, actually, it's not vulnerable to anything. Whereas with OSCP, you know everything's vulnerable. So it's more like, you know, capture the flag hunting kind of stuff. You go in with a certain mindset. So for me, it was more about changing the mindset. And in that vein, sort of developing recon tools, like auto recon, got it again, which really help, with the sort of initial stuff. In terms of methods, I guess I learned a lot more about certain protocols that I hadn't really studied in the past, or I had studied but sort of forgotten about because I was more from a web hacking background. But I did some Hack the Box stuff and I watched some IPSEC videos. So yeah.
Awesome. All right. Thanks, Tiberius. Moving on, I'm going to limit it to two people, just because, as far as I know, there are only two people in here outside of myself. So again, Emma and Joe, this is for you. To those of you who failed the first time, why do you think you failed? And then how did you overcome this failure to succeed in later attempts? So I'll start with Joe first, and then we'll let Emma answer.
Okay, so this is Joe. So because I'm not allowed to say, I think I know I failed because I tried something on one of my boxes that was a really dumb idea, and there was nothing that told me that I should have done it in this specific way. I am not allowed to say what that thing is, I'm not allowed to say what the thing that I did is, or what the box, or anything about this, but the thing is, I tried to overcomplicate something that didn't need to be overcomplicated, and that's why I failed, so I overcame that by just not trying it on the second attempt, and it worked.
Awesome. All right, thanks, Joe, and we could really feel the bangs through that headset there. All right, Emma.
All right, so for me, as I've mentioned so many times before, this is a question mindset. I went in just trying to blaze through it, just get it done, and I really didn't take the time to do my report correctly, document, take a look at everything properly. I mean, as I said, for the buffer overflow, it ended up taking me like 4 hours because bad characters screwed me over. And just, I didn't take enough time and I made careless mistakes. So that my next time, I took my time, did it properly, documented everything down, and I ended up passing.
Cool. All right, thanks, Emma. So this question is the whole panel. Try to keep your answers a little short here. So with that being said, how did you particularly identify and avoid rabbit holes? So we'll start, you know, bottom up. So,
sorry, did you say me?
Yeah, you're first.
Okay, you cut out for a bit. So really, for me, it was, if I had an exploit that was going to work, I would write a list of exactly everything I needed to go right for that exploit to work, and then I would check. So a good example, for instance, which I'm writing a Windows Privesque course right now, but a good example would be with services, right? Insecure services in Windows. If you can modify a Windows service that runs this local system, then you technically could be able to privilege escalate, right? However, if your user doesn't have permission to stop and start that service, you're screwed, right? You can modify that service as much as you want. It's still running right now with the original settings. Unless you can stop and start that service, your configuration isn't going to do anything. So that was one thing that's really, you know, really important to know, is that, okay, in order for this privilege escalation to work, I need to be able to stop and start the service. If you have permissions to configure it, and then realize, actually, I can't, then that's probably a rabbit hole. So I think that's honestly the best thing. Rabbit holes suck. You're going to come across them in OSCP. But the easiest way to identify them is just to have an understanding of everything you need and make sure you have that going in before you go too far.
Awesome. Thanks, Hyperius. Joe, on to you.
So how I did this avoiding rabbit holes was, I just did a simple methodology of, I gave myself 30 minutes on each part of each box. I tried attacking something for 30 minutes. If that did not work, I would move on to something else. And if I did seem to be getting somewhere, then I would just keep going, and I keep doing again that 30 minutes. So pretty much I gave myself short burst of time so that if something worked, I just kept going. I kept going deeper because it obviously meant that I might be getting somewhere. And if I reached that 30 minutes and I didn't get anything, it obviously meant that I might be hitting a rabbit hole. So then I just moved on to another box or to something else to try. And then I just kept doing that until I just got to the end of it.
All right. Thanks, Joe. Poppy, on to you.
For rabbit holes, I think the best way to avoid them is just kind of understanding what you're doing exactly and knowing how to troubleshoot them. Like, for example, let's say you're enumerating some sort of web. And there's like some sort of application version that, you know, that you Google it and there's like, there's a public exploit for it on ExploitDB. You run the exploit, doesn't work, right? What do you do from there? You got to know how to troubleshoot it. For example, maybe proxying it through burp, see what requests are being sent. Like, and a big thing, the big difference with the exam is too, I think a lot of the exploits are not going to work out of the box, is what I've noticed, which is different than the labs. A lot of the lab exploits, just you run them, boom, you got it. It works, right? Got to find a lot of the exploits on the exam machines. So you're going to have some sort of understanding work. So I think to avoid the rabbit holes, just try to understand the service as much as you can and know how to troubleshoot them. And that's it.
All right. Thank you, Poppy. Emma?
For me, rabbit holes are more like if...
Props by accident.
Okay, that happened. Anyways, for me, rabbit holes were more if something was painfully obvious, that's probably a rabbit hole. If something is way, way too complicated above PWK, then yeah. Wait, am I in this chat? Everyone's saying rip.
Yes, you're still here.
Alright. yeah, but just try to take my time. If something wasn't going to happen, it wasn't going to happen. Just do as I can. And yeah.
Alright, thanks, Emma. And then last but not least, Bjorta?
I think rabbit holes, for the most part, you can... Well, I was able to identify fairly quickly. For example, if you're scanning a box and you see 21's open, but also 80's open, and 80's an actual web page, not just like a default page installation, you're probably going to want to start with port 80. If you don't see anything, if you can't enumerate any kind of version of a server or a service that's running, you know, put that aside and start with something you do have listed. But also don't keep beating yourself against a wall if you can't find anything. Like if you're at a web page and you know, you've tried brute forcing, you've tried looking at the source code, you've tried Durbuster, GoBuster, and you just, nothing's there. Like, just move on to something else. You know, you can always go back to that service. Just look at something else. There's other stuff out there.
All right, awesome. Thanks, Virta. And then just, I guess, another quick plug in here before we move on to the next question and opening it up to the general chat. Yes, this AMA is being recorded. It'll be posted online somewhere. This is Falcon Spy talking. So if you're just tuning in now, you'll be able to recognize my voice if you were listening previously or, you know, first tuning in now. So I'm going to limit this question down to three people because I believe two of you are already in the pen testing field. So that being said, you know, if you're in the pen testing field, try not to answer. So that being said, here's the question. You're interested in becoming a pen tester before the OSCP certification. Has going through the certification changed your outlook on whether you still wanted to do pen testing? So I don't remember who is in the field. I know Tiberius is. Who was the other one?
I think Poppy is.
All right. So then Poppy, sorry, you can't answer. So anyway, we'll start with Bjorta and then Emma and then... And then Joe, and then we'll open it up to general chat for their questions.
So I definitely wanted to get into pen testing before OCP. Going through the certification, I definitely have realized that you know, everyone says it's an older course, but older software, older vulnerabilities. Although some of it is relevant, you really do realize just how much you don't know. If you're especially starting out. And so I've discovered that I'm more interested now in binary exploitation, even though I failed OSCE. I would like to go for OSWE and get into web pen testing. However, I don't know. My programming language is about as good as doing a for loop in Python. So that's probably not going to happen. But it is something I still want to do pen testing. I think I want to get more into the binary exploitation side of it.
All right, sorry about that. I didn't mean to do the priority. Emma?
For me, it was more just kind of realizing how much I don't know. As you're not going to know everything. It's being the exam and labs really just exposed me to so much different types of vulnerabilities. And I mean, people do say it's old, but when is things updated? Like, the corporate network's never going to be updated. And at least it's better than CEH, but that's not hard to do. Anyways, yeah, it just really exposed you to so much different things. It's just, you get a better understanding of the field as a whole and what you'd be exposed to. You got web apps, you got networks, you got services and all that stuff. Yeah.
All right, thanks, Emma. And then last but not least for this question, Joe.
So I would say I'm kind of off of what Emma said. It kind of shows you that you really don't, there's a lot out there, and really OSCP is just scratching the surface. And it just made me helped make me understand like what else is out there. And then it's kind of like your foundation of pen testing. So it kind of, at that point, you can try to start moving into things. You want to go into like, if you want to go into like Active Directory, if you want to go into like web pen test, if you want to go into like binary exploitation, if you want to do like embedded systems, if you want to do like network devices, so on and so forth. So like it kind of just expanded, opened all this and be like, all right, so now I have my foot in the door with all this. Now I can expand to what I want to do and possibly just go deeper into what I want to.
All right. Thanks, Joe. All right. So that concludes our kind of pre-selected questions here. We're going to open the general chat open here. It is in slow mode, so it'll be about every minute before you can send another message or question. So for any of you that had your questions, feel free to kind of pop them into the chat here. I'll kind of pick them as we go and, you know, kind of limit it down to one or two people. We'll probably keep this going for another, 15 minutes or so. And then, you can add, we'll open the chat up here, the voice chat, to anyone who wants to ask, for anyone who wants to stay after, or just, turn off slow mode in the chat here. So that being said, let's go ahead and pick some of these questions in here. So Mojo asked a pretty good question. Probably this is more so for Tiberius, or probably more so for kind of just Poppy, actually. How long did it take you for you to get a job after the OSCP?
I would say about 3 months, actually. After I got my OSCP, like I said, I started, that's when I realized that I want to do web apps. And I agree with Tiberius when he says that web apps is definitely probably the way to go for job security and things of that nature. It did take me about 3 months. So after I got my OSCP, I really dove into the web apps, did all the port swigger stuff. I did the eLearn security course, which are amazing. Did some web CTFs, put those on my resume, and put some Hack2Box on my resume, showed some initiatives, tried to kind of really drive home the fact that I was passionate about it. And, I had the methodology down from the OSCP. And I think at least, I was getting crazy amounts of hits from recruiters. I was getting a call almost every day. And I think having the OSCP is enough to get your foot in the door. From there, you really just need to show that that you're really passionate about it. Do some extracurricular stuff. Like the CTFs, they mean a lot.
Awesome. All right. Thanks for that. So just another quick thing, if I don't pick your question, it's nothing personal towards you. It's kind of just trying to make sure, we get in really interesting questions or something that, could help others. So nothing personal towards anyone. But that being said, I'll, next question here. Feel free for anyone to answer from the panelists. Try to keep it short. How do you recommend approaching the reference material and cheat sheets for the exam? So, what did you do to, kind of create these, notes for yourself while as you were doing the lab machines probably. And then is it not worth writing your own or using online ones that people might have found or created for themselves?
I think cheat sheets as well as reviewing people's blogs is definitely a good way to prep for the lab. I went through the lab and took notes on every machine like it was an exam host of screenshots, commands ran, errors I ran into, how I fixed them. That way, if I ran into something similar, I could, search through my cherry tree document for anything related to it. But you should also build your own at the same time, because that's one way you learn about these commands. You just don't take what someone ran with their, for example, their auto recon line or their Nmap scan and just run it blindly without knowing what any of the arguments are for what they do specifically and why. For example, if you Nmap this one box and you know what's up, but it's saying it's down, why is that? So definitely build your own, but it's not a bad idea to take other people's as a starting point and reference, as long as you understand what you're actually running.
All right. Thanks for that, Bjerta. I guess Joe wants to answer that one quick, and then we'll go to the next.
So this is Joe. So I'm going to say that. So I was kind of weird with this. I really didn't have any cheat sheets or anything like that really open during the exam. Because a lot of the things was, I think a lot of the exam is when you see something, are you able to understand what it's saying and go off that? Like, oh, I found this. Hey, I wonder if anyone else has found anything like this before on something. Oh, hey, somebody might have. What can I do with this now? Oh, I can do this with it now. Now I can just go deeper and deeper and deeper. So kind of like the being able to really use that Google foo, I thought was easier. Like the being able to take one thing and then just keep going down that chain until I got to my shell, got my user flag, got my root flag.
All right. Thanks, Joe. Sorry, I just taking a second here to scroll through some questions, finding which ones are good. All right, for those of you that did do VHL before the exam, or you know, after failing an exam, you know, was Virtual Hacking Labs beneficial for you? And then, or did you feel like it was overkill or you know, kind of child's play?
I thought it was good. I took it before jumping into the labs, but after messing around on Hack the Box, one thing I was not a fan of with the labs is you're kind of just going in there blind. There is a Discord for their virtual hacking lab, but when I was using it, it was pretty much dead. So you're kind of on your own in there, which isn't that bad, but I've noticed that one way I learn, as well as something I did in the Cali labs, was if I ever got stuck, because I was really new to this, I could beat my head against the wall over and over, but unless I knew what I was looking for, like just even a nudge, I just don't know what to look for. I don't have to Google. I don't know what commands to run. So just even like a hint system or anything was definitely useful.
All right, thanks, Yurta. So kind of passed on that, I guess we're being upvoted, so sorry about that, guys. So here's the question. You know, what kind of minimum pay would you expect for a junior pen tester, probably within the USA for any of you who are actually here? I believe actually all of our panelists are located here in the States. What's the minimum pay that you were expecting or you think should be there for anyone who's kind of looking to join the field?
Falcon, by the way, # Canadian gang here. That's all.
Yeah, all right, Canadian person there.
I think the junior position, like, it depends a lot. There's a lot of variables, right? Cost of living. Obviously, it depends where you're going to be. I mean, it's going to be different if you're here in New York City or something like that compared to Alabama. But regarding the pay, and I can't really, it is really hard to say. But I think for your first job, your junior position, you shouldn't really be focusing that much on pay. It's more of a learning experience, and that will definitely open up a lot more doors. For me, I'm in Seattle. Cost of living is very high. I don't know what everybody else is getting paid, but I'm just at the six-figure mark. But like I said, the cost of living in Seattle is pretty dang crazy. So at the end of the day, it might not be that much. But I'd say probably it really varies. I'd say it could range from 60 to 100, 100 obviously being on the higher side. I'd say more frequently it'd probably be in the 60 to 80 range, or maybe a little bit more than that. Sid probably knows more.
All right. Thanks, Poppy. Sorry, I missed a question here that a lot of you were kind of voting also. So what do you think is missing from the learning materials of the PWK course, if any? And do you think anything should be added, factoring, you know, in that the increased length of the course, length of the course? So I'll leave that open to any of you that want to answer. We'll probably leave it to two and then move on to the next question.
I feel like web app testing should be a lot longer in there, as everything is becoming a web app, for better or for worse, or that progressive web app stuff, you know.
Drops again.
All right, have fun. Progressive web apps.
I can speak. Oh, she's dropped. Oh, nope.
Stuff like that. But web app should be more focused on, as everything is becoming a web app, sadly. Even Discord, the native app and stuff like that. Oh, web app. How fun. But, yeah.
Yeah, I have web apps as well. But I think based on feedback I've got, privilege escalation is a massive hole in the course. As for if they should actually integrate it, then I would disagree because that would mean less money for me. But I think definitely if they actually, if there was an area that should be improved that's actually related to the exam, because web app testing isn't really on the exam. It's definitely more of a, you know, actual exploit course. But the privilege escalation is on the exam. You definitely need at least one privesc to pass. So I would definitely say privilege escalation is a big hole.
Awesome. Thanks, Tiberius. Again, for those, if I don't select your question, it's nothing personal to you. It's either I just didn't see it. I didn't think it would be kind of very beneficial for other OSCP holders or people who are trying to get their OSCP to have answered. So, but we are trying to include some, you know, related to jobs and careers. So, you know, where we can. So this one is kind of related to kind of career searching. You know, anyone can answer who, I guess, you know, has a career in this field. You know, is it worth to go start job searching immediately after obtaining your OSCP? Is there any extra education requirements for entry level jobs, such as an associate's position, or whatever? You know, if you're in computer science,
I think I can probably answer this one. And I would honestly, you don't really lose anything by applying for jobs. The job market is so diverse and companies are all different and they're all looking for different things. And you can apply for a junior position where they say, oh, we want you to have at least 2 years experience. And if you don't have the experience, apply anyway, because what's the worst thing they do is they just reject you. But, you know, it doesn't really matter because if you don't apply, you don't get the job anyway. So I think the whole level of experience requirement on a lot of job positions is less of a requirement, more of a HR push. So I encourage people to apply and see what happens, because you might at least get to speak to someone in an interview and they might like the sound of you. And if you can sell yourself in terms of the experience you have from OSCP or Hack the Box or anything like bug bounties, then you might get through to the next round.
So this is Joe. So one thing that I would like to say that people seem to be missing from the thing is, one other important thing is, if you're in a big city, like a decently sized city, one thing that will really help you is connections. Because if you have connections in this field, you can get a job that you might not normally be able to get, because somebody might want to be willing to take a chance on you if they know more about you. So if you have the ability to connect with people, like a lot of big cities usually have stuff like hacker conventions or like hacker groups, depending on your city. But I know a lot of big cities do. So just go out, get yourself out there, and that'll help you get a job too.
All right, thanks for that. It looks like I've scrolled to the bottom and hit all the questions that would seem relevant. So if anyone has anything else, you know, feel free to ask it in the chat. Otherwise, we'll turn off slow mode and, you know, everyone can feel free to just chat, you know, in voice chat or do whatever they want in here. So I'll give it another minute before I kind of just open things up. Looks like I missed a question here, maybe.
This question has just come up about why did I pass OSCP? And honestly, it was, I'd always meant to get it at some point. It was one of those like certs that obviously has kind of a high rating, I guess, it's, you know, it's famous, right? So in the InfoSec world. So I'd always wanted to get it. I just never got around to it. And my company had just been acquired by another one. And so my boss came to me and was like, so we still have like a training budget and we can bill anything because the old company is just going to pay it. So I got OSCP that way. So it was kind of a roundabout way of getting it.
All right, thanks for that, Tiberius. All right, so here's another question for the panel. Are there any exercises in the PWK that needs to be done with screenshots, texts, or just commands? So, I mean, it's kind of open, Yeah, why don't we go ahead and let one person answer that?
I did screenshots and just text commands because I wasn't sure what they wanted in lab report.
All right, thanks for that. All right, here's another question. Do you have any tips or advice for people who get their first interview to become a junior pen tester?
Yeah. Know the OWASP Top 10. A lot of people are looking for web apps, like Tim said. Be very familiar with the OWASP Top 10. They're going to ask you a lot. They ask you a lot of web app stuff and just basic networking stuff. So I'd say definitely familiar with the web apps, like stuff like how cores works and things of that nature. But it also depends what kind of pen testing position you're applying for, because different companies are looking for different things. Maybe they look for a network guy, or maybe an embedded systems guy, or a web app guy. But I think best bet, if you're just applying for pen testing positions in general, they're going to want to know that you know the basic web apps. So focus on the OWASP Top 10, just cores and things of that nature.
All right. Thanks for that, Poppy. All right. So for anyone in the panel, what to do next after obtaining your OCP? Do you go for a job? Do you try to obtain the next certification by OFSEC? Do you branch out to other
OSEE.
All right.
I would say this depends again, because this is Joe. So like I said, OSCP is like a foundation. It all really depends on where you want to go. Like if you want to do a lot of white box testing, then their web expert certification is great. You want to do like advanced Windows exploitation, then like the OSEE is really great. But then if you want to do something like Active Directory, they really don't have much Active Directory. So you usually can go off to somewhere like the Pentester Academy with like their red team labs. It mostly depends on just where you want to go in that thing. There's so many things. It just depends on where you want to go in that branching. There are a lot of good OFSEC certs, but they don't cover everything. So it mostly just depends on where you want to go.
All right. Next question. I think we'll ask one or two more after this. So for any of you that kind of have some specialization in network pen testing, what do you need? What does a person need to know or specialize in order to get into network device pen testing? Kind of a bit away from obviously, the offensive security certified professional, but this could be OSWP, but if you do network pen test, network device pen testing, what can someone, what would be beneficial for them to know?
Isn't OSWP using Backtrack to exploit WEP though?
Yes.
Network device web pen testing, I don't think there's too many courses on that, to be honest, or where the learning material for that, what you could look for. I know SANS has two ICS courses, but SANS courses are out of most people's training budgets or personal budgets. I've never been through them. I have no idea what they're like, but that's all I know for network device.
All right. All right, so this one was just asked, what was your favorite part of the course, either topic, something about the lab? Probably can't answer too much about the exam other than probably just very small things. We do have TJ here spying on us, so if you decide to talk about the exam, it's on you.
I think honestly the best part of the lab for me was the structure of it. So it is, I think, three separate networks. So you do actually get to practice pivoting. And obviously there's a kind of mini challenge where you can get, into the admin network ultimately. So that was fun. And there's obviously multiple ways of doing it as well. So I think that was probably the best bit for me. It was a lot of pivoting and just learning new pivoting techniques.
I'll also agree on the structure aspect of it. Their network is really well set up. You don't see a lot of courses that are that many lab machines as well as networks and firewalls and devices you can jump through. I do wish that there was more Active Directory in the lab, or at least a separate, a fourth or a fifth network that was mostly Active Directory related, as well as a little bit more social engineering. There was, I think, one machine where you could send an email and it would get executed, or so a user script would basically open the email. I wish there was more of that in the lab.
Dirty cow, best exploit.
All right. Well, I think that's it in terms of our questions. Oh, there's one. So any terms, any tips for lateral movement? This is probably related to kind of the labs. Yeah.
I guess I answered this earlier, not in the AMA, but in response to someone, I think, in general. Yeah, so obviously I had like a list of things that I would just search for once I actually got root. So obviously the first thing you want to do is dump any hashes, because to be honest, there might be something in there. You never know. So I basically collected all the hashes from every single machine I rooted. But you also want to check out, you know, every user's home directory. Look for, you know, interesting files. Look for zip files. There might be, you know, a text file with something in it that's just interesting. And finally, I would always, when I could at least, so that this was mostly on the Unix like boxes, I would run TCP dump for like 10 minutes, and then just download the input, open it in Wireshark, and have a look through. Because a lot of the times these machines are dependent on each other and the dependencies are usually communicating. So you can learn a lot and you can see, okay, well, I've got root on this one, so that means I can now probably target this other one. So those are the three things I would do, like dump hashes, look for interesting files, and just do a like a 10-minute network dump and see exactly what's happening.
All right. Thanks, Tiberius. I think we're kind of out of time here on the AMA, for at least here in the voice chat. I know Emma has a, you know, a quick ad plug in here for the upcoming podcast that we're going to start doing on the server. So take it away, Emma.
All right. So we are thinking... And it dropped out again. Have fun. So we are going to be doing a podcast here. We are looking for some episode topic suggestions. Feel free to DM me or Tib. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
All right. Well, thank you for that. And that's, you know, that concludes our AMA here. We'll look to probably do another one in the future, maybe even switch it up to do something for OSCE, try to get some of our OSCE holders to kind of chat in here for anyone who might be looking for that next. But thank you everyone for your questions. Thank you to our panelists for their time. And, you know, thank you to everyone that was able to tune in here. You know, feel free to stick around and yeah, use the voice channel as you please.
All right, we're going to try unmuting everyone. You can just leave and rejoin, be automatically unmuted, or wait for staff to unmute.
Joe, you sound beautiful.
This is going to be chaos, man.
Oh, of course it's going to be chaos. But that's
gonna wait, be- you know people could unmute each other, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm surprised that lasted.
Wait, fun times.
Wait, you could unmute.
Yeah, you
each
can
other.
Look here. I can mute you. Look.
Yeah, I'm looking in the audit log, and I can see exactly who's kicking people, and if they don't stop.
Oh, we're gonna hand out some bans.
Wait, if people could do that, I'm surprised that went as well as it did.
Yeah, it really did go well for that team.
let me call it some
for
names
a bunch
here
of
so they're embarrassed.
Guys, yeah.
All right, we'll make sure in the future we have better permissions.
And thank you for listening to the InfoSec Prep Podcast. Tune back later.